Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into the latest edition of the Monday Morning Quarterback Podcast. It is Wednesday, January 24th, and it is championship week in the NFL, the AFC, the NFC Championship games. We are down to four teams. Championship Sunday, only a few days away. But, of course, before we get into that, there is plenty of coaching stuff to get into. There's a look back at the divisional round, and obviously we will talk about the two games ahead. And we'll pick the games. I think we're actually on opposite ends for once on one of them. So that'll be a little bit interesting. But before we get into all that, I'm Matt Verderam, of course, NFL writer here at Sports Illustrated. And Gilberto Manzano, my colleague with the same title. How you doing, man? What's going on?
Yeah, I'm doing well. And as people know, it's kind of a rocky week here at SI. But we're still here producing content. And I'm glad to be here with you, Matt, to talk MNQB podcast. And people always say the divisional round is the best weekend on the NFL calendar. I'm always kind of hesitant about that. But then there's some two really good games, right? We got the 49ers and the Packers, Chiefs and the Bills. So maybe it is the best weekend in football.
I am of that opinion. It certainly was a very interesting one. Even the Lions-Bucks was a pretty good game for the most part, tied going into the fourth quarter. And yeah, look, you touched on it. We probably should touch on it here at the top because people are probably confused and like don't know what the hell is going on.
Yeah.
So, look, Sports Illustrated is still here. We are still publishing. It is not dead. It is not dying. Essentially, what's happening, to put this into, I hope, layman's terms, because it's a complicated situation, is essentially there is a company called ABG that owns Sports Illustrated. Okay, they license out the intellectual property, which, you know, the magazine, the website, to the Arena Group, which is the company that signs our checks. And the license lapsed last Thursday. And so, unfortunately, there were some layoffs that the company went through. We lost some people immediately. Gilberto and I, obviously not among them. We're still here. And so really right now, we're just kind of in a limbo period. We're waiting to see if the two sides renegotiate a new license. And if they do, as far as you're concerned, as the consumer and the listener and the reader, like nothing's going to change. I mean, it's really, you know, nothing. You're not going to notice any difference. There's a potential that the license goes to another company. And then at that point, like, obviously we can't guarantee anything. I would imagine that in that world, we would go with SI to that new entity that's licensing out SI. And then, yeah, look, there is the third option. It's a nuclear option where the license just doesn't get picked up and SI goes dark. I would be pretty floored if that happens. I mean, Sports Illustrated has been around for 70 years. In my humble opinion, it is still, if not the place for sports journalism, certainly right at the top. It is still a profitable entity. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. So, you know, I just wanted to lay that out there for people who are like, Am I going to get another magazine? Am I going to? Yes. Yes. 1,000% yes. Like, we still plan on being here for a very long time. It's been a tough week. There's no question. We've lost friends who got laid off. But SI is still here. We are still producing content. We're still covering all the games. Like, don't. I think when it was reported, it almost read like this is the end of Sports Illustrated. And by the way, I don't blame the reports in the sense that, like, the way it was worded, it some of us were like, is this the end of the company? Like, what's happening? The company's still here. And we're hoping it'll be here for a very long time, whether or not that's with the Arena Group, who currently signs our checks, or if that's with another company that comes in is willing to pay the license. So that's where we're at. I know that's a little bit confusing, but I feel like it, as listeners, you deserve to kind of know what's going on.
Yeah, I'm glad you laid it out, Matt, and kind of explained the situation. And, you know, it did kind of bother me, you know, and people assuming it's the death of SI. Like, we don't know a lot what's going on. We're still unsure, but we do know we're still here. We're producing content and we're having a good time. So, yeah, it's a little rocky and uncertain. And you know, you don't know what the future brings. And we all have different situations. We have our own, you know, family stuff, backgrounds, whatever it is. So it is a little unsettling right now. But the whole demise of SI being dead, it's premature. We're here. And again, like it was a, it, I think I needed a day to kind of process everything, maybe 2 days. Then it's kind of, you know what? We're here watching football. It's the playoffs. Again, it's the best weekend in the NFL. Like people like to tell me, and it was a good time. And, you know, talking to you, Matt, and we haven't been in here as long as Albert and Connor, but the past year, I'm sure, you know, you could relate. It's been pretty, pretty fulfilling, you know, like a dream come true. I mentioned that, you've mentioned that. So, overall, it's been a great ride for a year, and we'll see what happens. How about that?
Yes, absolutely. So, listen, it's been great working, and I really truly believe it's going to work out. I do. I honest to God, I believe that. I think it's. I think it's. You know, I don't want to say it's going to be fine in the sense that we just lost a lot of colleagues, and so nothing's fine about that. Okay, I'm talking in terms of the magazine, the company, like the name, it's Sports Illustrated. I know the magazines are not as read as they were in the 80s and 90s. I'm not a moron. I get that. We still do a lot of traffic on the website, like an insane amount of traffic, especially on the NFL side, where thanks to all of you who are listening and reading, content remains king. You know, I'll be down covering the Senior Bowl next week with Albert. Like, this is it was weird this week. It felt like you were attending your own funeral online because people were like, here's a eulogy to SI. And you're like, well, actually, here's a piece I just wrote for it today. I get why it was reported that way. I don't begrudge anybody, but it's simply not the case. Like, SI might be around for another 50 years, probably now. Like, it's not, we're not planning on going in. So just to be clear, actually, speaking on all that, so let's pivot to something that's positive. I want just to real quick before we get into this, the magazine, I believe, is coming out this week for this for January. In it is a piece that I worked on for over 6 months. It is the 50 most influential teams in NFL history. And if you're sitting there thinking to yourself, like, oh, another listicle, no, not quite. Like, so we came up with a panel of, I believe it was 31 people in total, blue ribbon panel. We're talking people ranging anywhere from Albert and Bill Polian to Peter King to John McClain, the Lewis Riddick, the Ernie Accorsi, NFL historian John Turney, Ray Didinger, Mike Tenier, on and on. I mean, Amy Trask was involved in this as one of the panelists. Dave Damashek. I could go on. I mean, it's a who's who. Jason Cole, Rick Gosselin. I mean, tons of Hall of Fame voters, tons of people who have been involved in the league. So we did the panel, 31 people, I believe it was. We all voted on it. And, we came up with the top 50 teams in terms of their influence in NFL history, all the way back to 1920. And for those pieces, I wrote a bit about each team, all 50. And then we had a panelist give a quote for each team about why that team was so impactful. And then, which I think is the coolest part of this. So I reached out for every Super Bowl era team and a couple of the Packers teams predating the Super Bowl, reached out, and we got in touch with great players or coaches for every one of those teams. And we talked to them and they gave a quote about those teams. So we're talking about people like Jerry Kramer, Dan Fouts, Ty Law, Randy Cross, Drew Pearson. I mean, oh my God, I interviewed well more than a dozen All Fair. Bill Parcells was involved, Bill Billick, Brian Billick, excuse me, Dick Vermeil, Larry Zonka, Joe Namath. I mean, on and on and on. I mean, it was Bobby Bell was another one. It was a thrill to do it, to put it together. It in the magazine is 16 pages long. And that is only like 4,500 of the words. Like, if you read it in the magazine, you're not going to see all the player quotes because they had to cut it for length. I mean, there's no way it would have been a book. Online, it starts Monday, whatever that is, the 29th, and it goes all 5 days, 10 teams per day throughout the course of the week at SI.com. And there you can read it in full. It's more than 25,000 words. So I encourage everybody to please read it, check it out. I'm going to be obnoxious about promoting it. I'm doing every radio hit I possibly can in the country over the next week because not only did I put in a lot of work, but a lot, like our editors put in a ton of work. Albert, to give him credit, you know, he was gracious enough to sit there and do it. And Albert took it very, very seriously. So this was a lot of work for people that don't even work for SI, who are panelists, who did their yeoman's work for it. So please, if you enjoy what I hope is really good content, high-level stuff, read it. If you have any appreciation for the NFL's history, you want to have appreciation for it, you will enjoy this. It was a pleasure to put it all together.
Yeah, I'm glad you promoted it, Matt. You know, 25,000 words. You better promote that thing and go on the radio and the podcast here. So I'm glad it came together for you and you spoke to the right people. Those are a lot of Hall of Famers, a lot of people with football experience. And, you know, I'll say this, like, I don't get starstruck too often when I talk to people, at least like who are currently famous. But whenever you get an opportunity to talk to somebody that played football in the 70s or 80s and they're a Hall of Famer and they won Super Bowl rings, like, you kind of feel like, man, this guy was like that was the guy or that dude. Yeah. Back in the day, I got that a few times with Tom Flores. I got a chance to talk to him, former Raiders coach. So, won two Super Bowls too. So, I'm sure for you, anytime you picked up the phone or somebody called you, and like, yeah, that guy was a stud back in the day,
dude. It's funny because they were all so true to their personalities. Like, I interviewed Larry Zonka, and Larry was, and I love Larry, I've talked to him before. Larry is like, how can I word this? He's gently combative all the time, and then he's just combative, and it's fun. It was so much fun having the players who in some cases are in their 80s, be like, where were we ranked? And then you tell them, we should have been higher than that. You know, like, and they just, like, I interviewed Thurman Thomas for one of the teams, and he was great because he was like, he got off the phone, he texted me, he's like, I'm telling all of my teammates, like, everybody's so pumped we're on the list, right? Like, so, like, and then I reached out and talked to Bill Parcells about one of the Giants teams. And Bill was just very matter of fact, like straight up. And then he's like, he's like, how many of the, and I don't mind, I'll give a little bit away. He's like, how many of the Giants teams made it? I was like, two of them. He's like, you talked to Phil Sims? I'm like, yeah, I talked to Phil Sims, who, by the way, was awesome. He was actually the first one I talked to for this. And he's like, talked to Phil Sims? I'm like, yeah. He's like, did he tell you how much I yelled at him? I was like, yes. And he was just like, good. I'm glad he remembers that. And that was it. Like, but they were, people were so genuinely excited to be part of the list. Like, I didn't get one person who was like, what is this? What are you doing? Like, to your point about the Raiders, I talked to Matt Millen. I talked to Art Shell. It was just fun, man. Like, it was just really, like, you got some guys who were in their 80s. You had some people like Ty Law. Ty Law was like, he was so excited that they were on the list, and he was pumped. Like, it was a lot of fun, man. And to, like, go down memory lane with those guys. I'll tell you real quick, and then we'll move on. So the Cowboys, some of the Cowboys teams are the last ones I finished up by happenstance. And I was having a hard time getting numbers from the players. Nothing against the Cowboys and their PR staff. They're great. It's just, it was difficult. So I finally got Drew Pearson on the phone. And Drew was the man. He was awesome. And I said, hey, Drew, you know, there's one other Cowboys team. I got to get hold of somebody. And I'm having a hard time. Like, I'd hate to have them be the only team that I don't have a player quote from. It was like, don't worry about it. We'll get it done. He sent me seven numbers from one of the, he's like, just keep calling every one of them until somebody answers the phone. It was like, he was like, we have to be represented. I'm looking forward to texting everybody over the weekend and being like, hey, it's coming out on Monday. Like, make sure you go get the magazine. Make sure you go online. It was a lot of fun. If everything works out here at SI, we're going to make it a franchise where every year I do a top 50 thing and we do something like this. I'm a history nerd. It was awesome. Talking to Joe Namath was like,
wow,
bucket list thing. And Joe couldn't have been better. Joe was so excited about it. So In any event, lots of fun. Please go check it out. Launches on Monday. 5-part series, Monday through Friday, 10 teams per day. And it'll be in the magazine, a 16-page spread. I love to frame the whole damn thing at my house, but 16 pages might be. Our editor, John, has been, he's like, you got to frame it. You got to frame it. It's a huge spread. I'm like, John, I need a new wall. Like, yeah, 16. So we'll see what we do there. But in any event, all right, let's get into the week. So first of all, let's get into the games. We'll go back to the coaching carousel, and then we'll get into the AFC title game, the NFC title game. This weekend, 4 games. The only game that was a real blowout, the Ravens handled business. They crushed Houston. It was actually 10-10 at halftime. I looked like it was going to be interesting. And then to Baltimore's credit, they came out and they put Houston away pretty quickly. In the latter window, Green Bay, listen, you got to feel great about the year you had. You also got to be sick. They should have won that game. I mean, they gave that game away. The Niners, to their credit, found a way to survive. They got the job done. They win there. On Sunday, the Lions, I don't know how you felt watching that game. I never felt like they were going to lose that game, but it was tight throughout. They ended up pulling away a little bit in the fourth quarter. Tampa made it a one-score game, but they couldn't finish the job. Mayfield had a couple picks. And so their season, which was kind of like Green Bay, like, what are you going to do, right? I mean, you had a great year, but it ends in Motown. And then, of course, the game that most people were looking forward to all weekend long, it did not disappoint. Kansas City winning 27-24 over Buffalo. Tyler Bass, wide right, which a little salt in the wound there for Bills fans. Although, listen, I don't care if Tyler Bass hit that field goal or not. They were losing that game because Mahomes with 2 timeouts and a buck 40, like, they were getting down the field. So you can get mad at Tyler Bass all you want. I think he was delaying the inevitable if he hits that field goal. But we now know our final 4. So let's lead off with this. Instead of just going through all the games, who are you of the teams that survived, of the teams that won? Who were you most impressed by, and who were you least impressed by over those 4 games?
You know, for impressive, I think it obviously has to be the Baltimore Ravens. And I think we needed that last kind of, you know, I guess, check mark for them. Okay, you got a 20-day delay, you know, or layoff. Are you going to be rusty? Is it going to be 2019 all over again? You're the number one seed. Then they're 10-10. I was like, okay, maybe they are the same Ravens. And then the second half, they just blew them out. And I love what Todd Monken has done with Lamar Jackson, you know, the passer, the runner, combining all his skill set and put it on display against the Texans defense with the D'Amico Ryans. That was pretty impressive. And then on the other side, once they got a lead, Mike McDonald was playing with house money, just, you know, pressuring CJ Stroud. So they are that dominant team, and they feel like they're the number one team right now in the NFL. So, you know, I'm very impressed with, you know, with the Ravens. And then with the 49ers, you know, maybe I'm taking the easy ones here, but, you know, they weren't too impressive. But the thing here with the 49ers, how much do you take as a positive that they actually came back from a muddy game, I guess a rainy game, come from behind? You got smacked in the mouth a couple of times. They're not the most physical team to the Packers, but they played with the lead. They had a tough time, you know, containing Jordan Love. You know, one thing I think probably both of us kept saying, like, if that front doesn't get there, they have a weak secondary. And even Greenlaw and Fred Warner couldn't contain Jordan Love and Aaron Jones. And Matt LaFleur called an excellent game, but they couldn't put it away. So do they kind of just take that? You know what? We survived. We know what we could win in the fourth quarter. That record of being 0-30 with Kyle Shanahan, forget about it. Brock Purdy, forget about the rainy game and all the misses. You won that freaking game. Be confident and let's move forward. So I don't know how to feel about that. I do like that they checked the box in terms of playing from behind, but it wasn't a good game by any means.
Yeah, I mean, I echo your thoughts, so I won't go down the same road. I agree with you. I think that's well said. On the losing side, I want to talk about the Bills because I think the other 3 teams, I think it's pretty straightforward, right? Like, they were all thrilled that they got that far. You know, Houston has a quarterback, obviously. Green Bay has a quarterback, no question. Tampa, look, I think Tampa, if nothing else, I mean, Mayfield's going to be back there next year. He should be. So I think, you know, look, those 3 teams, I don't want to push them aside for any fans out there listening. They had great years. They had great, they wildly exceeded expectations. I think Houston and Green Bay, it's clear, are going to be around for a while. And then, look, Tampa, they got some big question marks in free agency. I mean, Evans is hitting it, Winfield's hitting it, Mayfield's hitting it. So they got some work to do. But the Buccaneers certainly exceeded any expectation any reasonable person had for them. Now, for the Bills, I'm not going to sit here and say that loss is devastating from the standpoint of they were really beat up. And they played, you know, they played pretty well, but they lost. They played pretty well offensively. Defensively, they got shelled. I mean, before the Chiefs nailed down, they're averaging 9 yards a play, which is bonkers. But it is devastating from this standpoint. They have now gone to the divisional round 4 straight years. They advanced the first time to the AFC title game. The Chiefs clobbered them in that game. 2021, they had the 13 seconds game in Kansas City. They lose that game. Last year, they are home for the first time. Actually, excuse me, they're home for the second time in the divisional round. In 2020, they played Baltimore at home. They won it on a low-scoring game. They go home for Cincinnati. They're big favorites last year at home against them. The Bengals are all beat up front. The Bills are riding a long winning streak. The Bills got smoked in that game. And now this past weekend, they play a Chiefs team that, look, I think most people would agree is the most vulnerable the Chiefs have looked in years. And they lost to them. And they couldn't stop the offense. I get they were beat up. I understand all that. The Bills have a lot of decisions to make this offseason. A lot. Both in free agency and with guys who are not technically free agents but have 1 year left on their deals. Guys like a Jordan Poyer. What are you going to do with him? Where do you think Buffalo, like, if we're sitting here now, where does Buffalo go from here in your eyes?
It's tough because they have a strong core, but they also have cap space issues. They have a lot of guys that got old quickly. And, you know, what happens with Stephon Diggs? I feel like Stephon Diggs might be the first piece here. And, you know, his contract is a pretty heavy one, and he has a cap hit number. You know, it's not even just about the contract. He kind of showed his age a bit. You know, I think he's 30 years old. You know, didn't record a 100-yard game since what, week 6 or week 5 against the New York Giants, and got the opportunity in that game to get a, you know, down the field shot, and he dropped the ball. So, yep. And then he's not really talking to the media too. So, and then he had that weird, you know, absence from training camp. He was there and then he left, and then, you know, just being silent with the media, kind of, it just feels like there's some kind of disconnect there with Stephon Diggs and the Buffalo Bills. And then even it also felt like, you know, in terms of on the field scheme wise, like they're trying to like phase him out, maybe not intentionally. And there's a couple of shots there where Josh Allen wants to, you know, go down the field to get him involved. But this team is better when they go through James Cook, Dalton Kincaid, Dawson Knox, Khalil Shakir, even Gabe Davis, because he's a good blocker too as well. He didn't play in the playoffs, but, you know, and maybe that's the part about it too. Like when Josh Allen wants to play hero ball, part of it is he wants to get Stephon Diggs involved because obviously he's going to hear about it if he doesn't get him involved. Yeah. And when Josh Allen does that, things don't tend to go well. Now, I'm not saying they shouldn't be explosive. They needed some explosive plays against the Kansas City Chiefs. They're a little too conservative, but it was working for 3 quarters. I'm surprised the Chiefs defense couldn't stop that running game. They were getting carved up. The whole element there with Josh Allen being a runner was difficult to kind of match up with. I don't like that he takes a bunch of hits doing that, but that's a story for another day. But it feels like this Bills squad, they don't know who they want to be. And when they kept going back and forth and being conservative to, you know, bombs away, and they're kind of in the middle, and that we saw that in that fourth quarter kind of meltdown, that pass in the end zone to Shakir. I know Chris Jones hit him, but why don't you, like Tony Romo said, why don't you go to Diggs, or why don't you go to me or a tight end or James Cook? Just keep moving down the field and kill clock, because like you said, Matt, if they get that field goal, plenty of time was still in the clock with timeouts for the Chiefs to go and win that game or tie or whatever. So it was poor execution, but it was kind of ironic that they don't know who they are. So maybe the Diggs factor could force them to go one way, draft a wide receiver, get younger, and build through that way. And the other part of it, too, is like, I know Sean McDermott's going to be around, but have we reached a point where, like, he's maxed out? This is a wall here. Yep. Like, you can't get past the second round. I know he went to the title game, but he's gone backwards. And, you know, you gave him credit. I have, too, for, hey, this Bills franchise was kind of on the down for many, many years. And he comes in, and they go to the playoffs. So are you content with doing that again? Or do you say, you know what, I see Mike Vrabel out there and go hire that guy. But it feels a little too late in the game for that. So I think McDermott is back.
Yep.
So I go back to Stephon Diggs here.
So I try to just be direct with this. They're not good enough. They're not good enough. Like, at some point, we do this weird thing in the media, and I'm not saying you and I in particular, just in general, where it's like, well, the Bills – Allen's a laser show, and they're so exciting. And look at what they do, and look how they blew out this team. They blew out that team, and they're the best team. They're not. We've seen this now 4 years in the playoffs. I'm not including the first year they made the playoffs because they were kind of like just young and happy to be there, and they weren't the same thing. The last 4 years, they've had real expectations. And the last 4 years, the reality of the situation is the Chiefs have kicked them out of the playoffs in 3 of the 4 years, and Cincinnati beat the Chiefs to it the other time. That's it. That's the reality. And we can sit here and talk about Allen, and we could talk about Diggs, and we could talk about McDermott, whatever you want to talk about, defense. And that's where I want to go with this is the defense, which kind of does go back to McDermott. In all four of their playoff losses, they have gotten plowed defensively. All four of them. The 13 seconds game, the Chiefs hung 42 on them. The year before that, they hung 38 on them. The Bengals and the Chiefs in the last 2 years each scored 27 points, and both, it feels like, should have and could have scored more. I mean, if Hardman doesn't fumble the ball, the Chiefs have 34 points. Like, their defense stinks in big games. It stinks. Period. Flat out. Like, and that's a McDermott problem. You know, now he was the coordinator this year for it. The other 3 years, it was Leslie Frazier. But McDermott's a defensive-minded head coach. It falls at your feet. They're not good enough. Because Allen, if you look at those four games, I would say in two of them he wasn't good. The AFC title game years ago, he did not play particularly well. And the Bengals game didn't play well. He was otherworldly in the 13 seconds game. No fault of his own. And I had nothing he could do. And in this past game, I wouldn't say he was great. I thought he was very good. He ran for, I think it was like 80 yards. And look, the only thing I would say in the game, and part of that was the Diggs drop and everything else, but like past the line of scrimmage, he was 10 of 21 for 95 yards. I mean, if you're going to be compared to Mahomes, you can't go 10 of 21 for 95 yards past the line of scrimmage. You just can't. Sorry. Like, you got to make a few things happen. That being said, I mean, I don't even think he's in the top three reasons of the reasons they lost that game. I mean, they lost that game for a lot of other things, chief among them the defense. And yes, they were beat up. They weren't beat up on the line, and the Chiefs ran the ball down their throat the entire game. I mean, the Chiefs were blowing open holes. That's where I look at the Bills, and I just say, look, man, I'm sorry. At some juncture, reality is reality. You're not winning enough games in the playoffs to justify just running it back and being like, well, it's good. And they're not going to run it back this offseason because they can't. They're going to lose Hyde. They're going to lose Gabe Davis. Okay? Daquan Jones might be gone. After that, I mean, you got 1 year left with Poyer, who I would imagine is gone. 1 year left with Morris, who's probably back, but that might be it. Rasul Douglas has 1 year left on his deal. We'll see if they extend him, what they do. They maybe play it out. Diggs, I don't know what you do. I mean, he didn't have 100 yards since week six. He's over 30 years old now. You could post June 1 trade him. You're not going to get a fortune, but you'd still get a pretty good pick, I would imagine. Probably a second round pick, something like that. You know, because you're trading away that contract. Von Miller's untradeable. Von Miller, you're just stuck with $24 million on the cap next year. He did nothing all year long. Like, that's – and by the way, that's my other problem with Buffalo right now. The defensive line in that game, where were you guys? I mean, Leonard Floyd had 10.5 sacks. Leonard Floyd's on a milk carton right now. Did anybody see Leonard Floyd in that game? All I heard about was how Ed Oliver's been so great this year. And he has. Ed Oliver's been awesome this year. Excellent player. No show in that game. Nothing. Not one pressure in that game. It's first time in like a year and a half he hasn't had a pressure in a game. Daquan Jones. He was looking like an all-pro before he got hurt against Jacksonville. Where was he in that game? Nowhere to be found. You know, Von Miller's not been nowhere to be found all year long. Nothing changed. Greg Rousseau, you're a first-round pick, man. Make a play. Like, that's to me, that's the problem in Buffalo. You know, everybody's going to focus on Allen. And look, I thought Allen, if I had the grade, was like a BB+ in the game. Where's your defense? I get your linebackers are hurt. I get it. You still had your starting safeties. You still had your corners. Like, come on. Make a play. Do 9 yards per play. Are you kidding me? The Chiefs had 5 third down attempts in that game. 5. That's impossible. Buffalo had that on one drive in that game. So that's, I think Buffalo's got to do a serious look in the mirror at this point. They got to have a serious look in the mirror and really ask themselves, are we good enough to beat Kansas City, to beat a healthy Cincinnati team, to beat Baltimore? Because I got to tell you, the answer to me is no, they're not. And they've proven that over the last half decade.
Yeah, no, I can't disagree with anything you just said right there, Matt, in terms of the Buffalo Bills. So, you know, they have a lot of issues they got to figure out. They got stuff, you know, free agency. They got to make some trades. I think the coaching staff is going to stay the same, but we'll see what happens with the Buffalo Bills.
So let's move on to the coaching carousel instead of our bigger story because there's so much to get to this week. So the coaching carousel just got actually really interesting because Vic Fangio just left the Dolphins and is now going to join the Eagles, which maybe not a head coaching move, but a big move. Vic Fangio is one of the best defense coordinators in the league. Miami's defense jumped about 20 spots this year defensively, how much better they got. And now he's gone. And he goes to Philly, which is a coup for Sirianni and for Howie Roseman. So we'll touch on that here. Brian Callahan, taking the Tennessee job, the former Bengals offensive coordinator. So he leaves. He takes the job there. Shane Waldron goes from being the OC with Seattle to the OC with Chicago. I love that hire for the Bears. I think Waldron's an excellent OC. And then Antonio Pierce losing the interim tag, getting the job in Vegas. So let's start with the head coaches. Pierce staying in Vegas, essentially, and becoming the permanent head coach. Callahan to Tennessee. Do you like those hires? Do you think they're underwhelming? Where do you fall on them?
Yeah, the Brian Callahan one was, you know, interesting. Kind of came out of nowhere. And I know some people were saying, hey, watch out for this guy kind of late in the process. And I'm like, okay, we kind of hear that every year, like, you know, a surprise name or, you know, an offensive coordinator or offensive play caller, because people want that. It's a trend in the NFL. And when he got hired, I'm like, oh, no, they actually did it. And it kind of felt like he had other offers too. I think Albert and Connor were saying that. So, you know what? And I like the move because, you know, I get you want to change in philosophy. Obviously, you go from Mike Vrabel, a defensive background, so you probably want to have somebody more offensive-minded. So I understand that part. And there's not as many, you know, offensive coordinators out there this time around. Obviously, you got the big names are very, very established. And Bill Belichick, Jim Harbaugh, you can't hire Mike Vrabel again and maybe even a Pete Carroll. But, you know, I was not going to be surprised if him or Dave Canales got hired because, again, the offensive background. Like, sometimes I wonder about Mike McDonald being a defensive coordinator, maybe not getting a shot, but he's been really good. He'll probably get something there. But hey, what you've done with Joe Burrow and the Bengals and Zach Taylor always raving about you, hey, you're probably definitely a big part of that franchise there the last few years since Joe Burrow got there. And they're reading some of Connor stuff saying where Joe Burrow is pretty reserved to himself, but he has a lot of trust in Brian Callahan. And then obviously, you know, his dad is very famous, Bill Callahan, you know, offensive line coach for the Browns. I wonder if you're going to bring him down. Like, if your son's a head coach in the NFL, you want to coach with your son as a head coach. I'm sure you try to find a way to figure that out. But I like it. You know, it's a little different outside the box. And when you know you got a guy, go get and hire that person. So I'm okay with it.
Yeah, look, I like Callahan. I think, yeah, he's a young mind. Certainly spent time there in Cincinnati under Zach Taylor, and he's a guy who comes over from a loaded offense to an offense that, yeah, had some intriguing pieces. You know, Conquo being one of those guys, Treylon Burks being one of those guys, but certainly the kind of needs to find its way. I like the move, though. I think as long as he pairs with a strong defensive coach, you know, we watched the AFC South go young with the Colts and the Texans hires. Both worked out beautifully. I like that the Titans went young here. I like that the Titans, after having a defensive-minded coach in Vrabel, going the offensive route. I'm not, like, blown away by the hire, but I think it's a good hire. I like it. I like that you know, Callahan's getting a shot. He's been in the talk for the coaching cycle now the last couple of years, so I like it there. As far as Pierce goes, listen, Max Crosby basically was threatening to force a trade if they didn't hire Antonio Pierce. So I thought Pierce did a nice job. I thought he, you know, he's a leader of men. I thought it was the right move for the Raiders. I'm actually glad the Raiders did it because, like, the Raiders have this thing about they've always got to have the guy who they could plaster on a billboard and be like, this is our guy. I think Pierce, while not a Jim Harbaugh name, is the right name. Like, it's just a good hire. It's not flashy. It's not going to be in 1,000 watts, you know, all over the city. But, like, it's a good hire. Now, on the flip side of that, I'm not overly excited about the Tom Telesco hire for the Raiders as their GM. Tom Telesco did not draft well with the Chargers for a long time, especially once you got past the first round. Like, he was okay in the first round. Picks were a train wreck, second round and on most years. I mean, a disaster. And in free agency, couple hits, a lot of misses. Like, I don't love. I mean, this is a guy who had Rivers and Herbert for a decade and couldn't do anything with him for the most part. So, not in love with that. But I do like the Pierce hire. I give the tandem like a B minus. I give Pierce on his face. I give him like a B plus hire. I like that. Even A minus is cool with me. Telesco, I give like a C, C minus. I just think it's not the most inspired hire in the world. I like Pierce. I think Pierce is a good hire.
Yeah, you know, obviously I'm familiar with Tom Telesco from my days of covering the Chargers. You know, I think I got there in 2018. So I got to work with him for about 3 or 4 years very closely. And I'll say that he's definitely very savvy with the cap space, and that was kind of his baby with the Chargers. He kept that thing clean for his, you know, I guess what, 9 out of 10 or 9 out of 11 years, and then the pressure kind of got to him to make some moves, restructure some deals, make some trades. So the salary cap, he left it in bad shape. But I think that was more pressure. But then again, it kind of shows that he's a very conservative coach. Okay, he wants to make sure, the salary cap is nice. There's not a problem. That could be also a Spanos family thing. I don't know if that's a Tom Telesco thing. But, you know, he hit on his first round draft picks, and which is obviously an easier thing to do than the ones in the second, third, fourth round. So we all know that it doesn't really extend players past the first round. So, but when you get a Justin Herbert, which also he doesn't get a lot of credit because the Dolphins took Tua, and then you wonder who if the Dolphins take, Herbert and you're with Tua, how does that play out too? So it's kind of a different scenario. But he's good with that. He's a very conservative coach. Doesn't like to make, I mean, a GM, doesn't like to make a lot of trades. But he knows how to kind of build a roster and build kind of identity, a good culture too, things like that. He's just sometimes a little too safe. Doesn't take enough chances, I feel like. Like, obviously, Les Snead and Tom Telesco are just polar opposites, covering both of them in L.A., and Les Snead is very aggressive. Tom is not that way. But with the Raiders, they've had so much, instability the last, 20 years. If you want to find some stability and kind of have something safe, maybe it's not a bad thing for the Raiders.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. As far as Fangio going from Miami to Philly and Waldron going from Seattle to Chicago, listen, I think the Waldron hire in Chicago, they had interviewed Greg Roman. If Greg Roman had gotten hired, I think that would have been a very strong indication that they were going to stick with Justin Fields. They hired Shane Waldron. Shane Waldron runs more of a conventional passing attack, more of a conventional offense, coming from Seattle. Young guy, smart guy, guy who, look, there's even been some talk in the last couple of years, like, hey, he's a future head coach. He goes to the Bears. I think that leaves it wide open for anybody to be the quarterback there, whether it's Fields or it's one of these kids that they could draft. He became available because Carroll obviously is no longer the coach in Seattle. And so I think it's a really smart hire for the Bears. He's a young coach. He's somebody who could really, grow with this quarterback. If he doesn't get a head coaching gig, and if he does, well, then that says he's a pretty damn good coordinator and you're probably pretty happy to have him. So I like that hire. The Fangio thing is very interesting to me. The Fangio thing, that's a huge loss for Miami. I mean, Fangio's a really good defensive coordinator, supposedly going back to Philadelphia so he can be closer to his family in Pennsylvania. Great hire for the Eagles. And that's not going to be a huge scheme adjustment because they play a lot of his scheme anyway. Miami, if I'm a Dolphins fan, I am bummed, man. I thought that was a great hire last year, and it became one for them. And now he's out the door, and there's already talk about Brendan Staley's going to replace him. And man, listen, Brendan Staley's a coordinator. It's different than as a head coach. I get it. I'd rather have Vic Fangio as my coordinator. So that's a big bit of news out of South Beach.
Yeah, and when this Vic Fangio scheme became very trendy, Matt, I think the only person that was able to run it was Vic Fangio. So it hasn't been really a good look for the coordinators or that branch there for the tree.
Yes. All right, let's get into it here. Championship Sunday. So we got, of course, two games for the right to play in Las Vegas, Super Bowl, Super Sunday 58. And we're going to run down the lines, as always, from SI Sportsbook. You can go to SISportsbook.com for all gambling needs. The first of the two games, the AFC Championship, the Chiefs are in their sixth consecutive championship game, the only team in the longer streak, New England of the eight. They are at Baltimore. The Ravens have not been in this spot since the days of Joe Flacco. They are at home. They are laying 3.5 points. Do you like the Ravens to win? Do you like the Ravens to cover?
Yeah, I like the Ravens, and I know a lot of people, maybe a good amount of people, expect maybe a dominant performance because the Ravens have been very good, and then the Chiefs have been very so-so. Mm-hmm. But I think I did like what I saw for Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Rashee Rice and Pacheco last week, and obviously the Bills defense is not the Ravens defense, but I'm sure for confidence and building some kind of chemistry, I think that Chiefs offense could do some damage against Mike McDonald, Roquan Smith, Kyle Hamilton, and the rest of the gang there. So I do like the Ravens. I'll take the Ravens to cover. I'm not saying it's going to be like a dominant performance here, but still, going against Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid is going to be a tough task for them. And they're kind of new to this territory, I guess. So Lamar Jackson, right, first time being in an AFC title game. So it could be kind of uncharted territory for them. But then again, You know, I did not like what the Chiefs showed me defensively last week, but then it could be maybe it was a one-time thing because they were just so dominant before that. And yeah, I know there were some kind of injuries too, with some guys coming in and out. You know, I got worried when Trent McDuffie went out. I love watching him play, but he came back into the game. Legarius Sneed had another kind of lockdown performance on Stephon Diggs. So that, but the running game or the run defense really was concerning to see James Cook and Josh Allen go off on them. And then Lamar Jackson, obviously a much better mobile quarterback than Josh Allen. And then you got Dalvin Cook making plays. Imagine being a Jets fan and seeing that. Oh, they're all of a sudden Dalvin
That
Cook.
hurts.
Couple runs there because it's a good blocking there from Baltimore. And then Justice Hill and Gus Edwards. So I think that part could maybe throw off the Chiefs defense and maybe not, the thing about having such great defensive backs and corners and safety is like you can't really lock down somebody when you're playing kind of this run pass option, Lamar Jackson, and you guys, Isaiah Likely, maybe Mark Andrews is back. So I think the chess match is going to be very interesting, but I like the Ravens in a close game here.
So, look, I think this game is a bigger coin flip than the NFC game. I think this is a game that, like, if either team wins, I don't think anybody was walking away going, "Wow, I can't believe that team won." Like, I think you'd be like, "Okay, well, it's not that surprising." I'm to the point, and look, I know they're obviously, if you're listening, you probably know I'm a Chiefs fan. Like, I grew up one. I'm to the point of the Chiefs, I just treat them like the Patriots now. Like, I'm just going to pick them. I really am to the point. Like, first of all, one thing I think that does get lost a little bit, and everything you said is right. The Chiefs got to play way better against the run this week. I will say, I think there's more fear of the Buffalo passing attack than there is Baltimore's. Not that Baltimore doesn't have talent, but it certainly do. It's just the way Baltimore plays compared to the way Buffalo plays. I think that the Chiefs are probably more willing to put more guys down the box against Baltimore than you are against Buffalo. So that might be a little bit of a difference. It's also supposed to rain all day long down in Baltimore, so we'll see what happens. I will say, though, the one thing that's a little weird about this game is this narrative that, like, Baltimore has a great defense, which they do. But then nobody talks about that the Chiefs have the second ranked defense in the NFL. The Chiefs are second to Baltimore, like everything. Sacks, yards against, like points against, like they're second. In fact, actually, the Chiefs are second in yards against. I think Baltimore is sixth. The Chiefs defensively, one stat that actually shocked me because I was looking it up in preparation for this, according to Pro Football Reference. So Baltimore is number one in sacks at 60 this year. Kansas City at 57, they're number two. The Ravens' pressure rate is 23rd in the league. The Chiefs is second. I was shocked that Baltimore's pressure rate is that low. And to be fair, that says, hey, look, when they get home, they really get home. The other thing in this game, I think this is the key point. Baltimore this year, first team in NFL history to lead in points allowed, sacks, and turnovers. The Chiefs cannot turn the ball over in this game. If Kansas City, because Mahomes is very good, he's a lot like Allen about avoiding sacks. If Kansas City doesn't get into negative plays, I think they win this game because I think then, like the Ravens this year have been so good about forcing teams into third and longs and second and longs with sacks, and then they take the ball away. If the Chiefs don't fall into that trap, I think they'll be all right. I think this is a battle of defenses. I think it's a 3-point game either way. I think both kickers are excellent. So if it comes down to somebody making a kick, they're probably going to make it. Give me the Chiefs 23-20. I think it's a really good game. I wouldn't be surprised either way. I just think if it's close, the Chiefs have been here so many times. I just think they find a way to win the game. But I can't wait. I honestly think this could be the game of the playoffs. I think, and I will say this, spoiler alert, whoever wins this game, I think wins the Super Bowl. Take that for what it's worth. All right, let's go to the Lions and the Niners. Niners favored by 6.5. I almost said a candlestick. At Levi's Stadium, should be candlestick. The Lions coming off of the game where they beat the Bucs 31-23. Of course, the Niners escaped, as we talked about earlier. Do you like the Niners to bounce back strong here with the 6.5 points being laid? Or do you think that the Lions either cover or flat out win on the road and go to the first Super Bowl in franchise history?
I'll take the Lions to cover, but I'll pick the 49ers to win and maybe another kind of rally. They've done it before now, and I think that's a good thing. But, I think the Lions are much closer on the 49ers level than maybe some people want to, consider, or maybe they do because they've won these last two playoff games here. And, I recently wrote an SI that, I think the Lions have more weapons than the 49ers. People didn't like that. I'm not saying all pros, but when you got Sam Laporta, Jahmyr Gibbs, Dave Montgomery, Amon-Ra St. Brown, even Jamison Williams and Josh Reynolds contributing. Oh, and you got Penei Sewell, and we'll see about Jonah Jackson and Frank Ragnow was a monster in that game, playing with that banged up knee. So Jared Goff has it nice there, so I think they're gonna make some noise there. And then I actually was very impressed with Aaron Glenn's, defense and game plan against the Buccaneers. He gets a little risky. He maybe Brock Purdy might make him pay, but Baker Mayfield did make him pay a couple times too. But those DB kind of blitzes with Brian Branch and Melifonwu and Kirby Joseph and CJ Gardner-Johnson, like, it's kind of weird. They don't have good outside corners. We thought Cameron Sutton would be one of those guys, but they got a bunch of safeties and versatile defensive backs that are coming to throw some issues there at Brock Purdy. They're not the Baltimore Ravens, but they got playmakers and they got Aiden Hutchinson too, Aleel McNeil. So, it's gonna be a close game. I'm not gonna count out the Detroit Lions, but and then the other part too, what if you don't have Deebo Samuel? And then if he's not on the field, you're gonna send the pressure a little more, a couple more blitzes too. So to kind of rattle Brock Purdy. So, the more I talk about me, I should start taking the Lions. But I think the 49ers are gonna pull it off. He still had Christian McCaffrey. I love what Brock Purdy did with Brandon Ayuk and George Kittle. He finally said, you know what? It can be perfect. It can be beautiful all the time. We got the other stud playmakers here. And he had a nice throw to George Kittle for a touchdown. That third and five for 10-yard completion of Brandon Ayuk was impressive. You still got Trent Williams. And the other kind of key point here is I think Jordan Love's mobility and knack to extend plays really gave Nick Bosa and company a lot of problems. Jared Goff is not known for that. It has to be kind of structured in the pocket. So I think Bosa could get home, Chase Young could get home. And that way you put less pressure on your secondary. So give me the 49ers to win, but the Lions to cover.
I also think the Niners to win the Lions cover. Look, I will say this, though. I think there's a real chance the Lions can find a way to win this game. I don't give them the same chance that I give the Chiefs or the Ravens. I think that's more of a 50-50 proposition, where I think this is probably more like maybe a 2-1 for the Niners. But that's listen, it's one game. I mean, that's a real, chance to give a team. I think the Lions, if they're going to win, they're going to win up front. They're going to win because the offensive line can move guys. Montgomery and Gibbs can run the ball, and Goff can stay on schedule. Because let's face it, we all know with Goff, if Goff can stay on schedule, he can be really good. And if you can get Goff off schedule, it can be a problem. So I think the Lions, they got to win that way. But I think Ben Johnson's a hell of a coordinator, man. Like, he's going to figure out some ways to do these things. The Niners got bullied by the Packers at times in that football game. There's no way to say it. Like, the Packers were just moving guys in that game. So look, I think the Lions can do some of that. This has to be a big game from Hutchinson and from Aleel McNeil and the guys up front. They got to get pressure. They got to get home. The Lions are not a good coverage team. They've given up more air yards than anybody in the NFL this season. Okay. But look, Purdy, if you can get to him, you can also cause him a problem, which is, by the way, why I think in the Super Bowl, if the Niners get there, they got a problem, because the Ravens and the Chiefs, both of those teams defensively, are just going to tee off. And here it comes. And the quarterback on the other side, no matter who it is, not bad. So I think the Niners win. I think the Lions have a shot, but they've got to run the ball, and they've got to be able to win up at the point of attack on both sides. If they can do that, they have a chance to win this game. I think it's something like 30-24, something like that. I right around 28 to 23, somewhere in that range. So you have a Super Bowl of Baltimore and San Francisco. I have a Super Bowl, which, by the way, is what I picked for the playoffs. So if that works out, I guess I could hang my hat on that. I have the Kansas City, San Francisco. Either one would be a rematch of a pretty recent Super Bowl. And I think either way, it's a damn good game. I think it'd be fun. Really, any combination of these four teams would be fun. I think, the Lions and the Ravens, we did see that wasn't pretty for Detroit, but I think it would be fun. We shall see. Look, I would now, this is usually where we're like, hey, what happened this week? We all know what happened this week. This is a long week. I don't think we need to. We already did what happened this week at the beginning. So we'll skip it. We have some meetings to attend here in a few minutes. We got to get rolling. But any final thought you want to part with here as we go on a Championship Sunday?
No, not really. I think we covered the uneasiness at the beginning of the show, but again, I'm so excited for the future and watch some football on the weekend. So this is getting better than that sometimes.
Yeah, I am looking forward to watching the games, and then the next day boarding a plane for Pensacola before I drive to Mobile. So
Yeah.
we do this podcast
I've
next week.
actually
I'll
never
be.
been down there, Matt, so it sounds like it's an experience.
Yeah, I was just texting with Albert last night because I'm staying in an Airbnb and he's staying down at a hotel, and we're coordinating trying to meet up and whatnot. And it's no, it's gonna be good. This is how many times this will be. At least the fourth, maybe the fifth time I've been
Wow.
down there. They do a nice job. Jim Nagy and company, they do a really good job setting up the event. They do a hell of a job. I also love that it's sponsored by Reese's because I load up like nobody's business. The first time I went down there, they were just handing out like stacks of Reese's peanut butter cups. And it's like, I brought a bunch back to my hotel. This is going to be great. Like, I'll have Reese's for like a year, right? Well, when you're down at these events, sometimes because you're out with sources, you go out and you have a few drinks. And I didn't bring one of those Reese's peanut butter cups. Oh, man. It was a disaster. It was a beautiful disaster. But I know I do look forward to it. Jim Nagy and his staff do a wonderful job putting it together. They really do give you a lot of access, and it's a great place to see sources, meet with people, talk to people, and just see colleagues too. So that's a lot of fun. I am looking forward to being down there for 3 days or so. So listen, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for listening. Appreciate your support as always. And we will be back again next week to talk about the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 58. We will know what the matchup is about 100 hours from now. So for Gilberto Manzano, I am Matt Verderam. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.